Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Freaks and Geeks. We have a really awesome show for you tonight. We are talking about Stonehenge. Ooh, ooh. Our sources for the night are history.com, livescience.com, englishheritage.org, ancient.eu, Khan Academy Mysteries of Celtic Britain by Lewis Spence, Smithsonian Magazine, because we believe in all forms of nerddom and geekdom here at Freaks and Geeks. If you're joining us for the first time tonight, go ahead and do us a favor and head on over to Facebook and give us a like. Hang out for a little bit. Tell us what you liked, what you didn't, you know, whatever you want. But as always, I am joined tonight by my fearless companions and my forever crew, Christopher and the Hammer, Carrie.
Oh, man. Oh.
Yeah, it's going to be that kind of night, babe.
Oh, it's going to be that kind of night.
Hope you're right.
Hey, babe, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's about that time. It's about that time tonight, babe. We're going to talk about that Stonehenge.
Oh, man, you know what I'm talking about? I got a bit of a stone in my hinge right now, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Big circle. Yeah, just get down inside of it. Yeah, try to compete with my caramel cords. You're going to get served. You don't know about...
Oh, my God. Maybe we could do some of them ancient rituals later. You know what I'm talking about? Maybe a little bit of blood sacrifice. No, I'm saying it's that time of the month. Ooh, ooh.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Shut it.
I'm just going to sleep downstairs tonight. Does that sound cool?
I mean, you know, the phases of the moon.
Gives a new meaning to blood moon, I'll tell you that much.
Menstruation is a hell of a drug.
Okay. So we need to take care of some business before we go on and talk all about Christopher's Stonehenge. It's old and decrepit and missing some pieces. Anyway, some pieces missing there. Anyway, so we are going to talk about the world's largest ghost hunt. Your humble hosts, will be hosting for the Cabinet 360 that is in Mechanicsville, Virginia. So if you wish to come hang out with us for a very nominal fee that goes toward a really great cause, it's going toward the American Federation for Suicide Prevention, which is what we have picked. Hey, man, come on out and hang out. That's on September 29th. And again, the location that we'll be at is in Mechanicsville, Virginia. However, I will say that it is literally around the world. So if you're in the Philippines listening to us, there's a location for you. If you're in Scotland listening to us, there's a location for you. And the best part about all of this is that even if you can't make it out to this humongous event, you can still participate because it is going to be broadcast live. All of those different locations are going to be streaming their hunts, and you can tune in, you can listen to them, and you can donate, you can do whatever you like. So we would be happy to have you. Yes. Okay. All right. So otherwise, tonight we are going to, like we said, we're going to talk about the, we're going to go back in time, take a little steppy back, simpler time, maybe go get yourself, you know, like a single malt scotch. Go sit down in a leather chair, smell the fine leather and, you know, whatever, bonded leather, whatever the fuck you're into. Go ahead and sit down in your chair. Bonded leather. Go ahead and sit down with your scotch, maybe light up a cigar, enjoy yourself. We're going back to the Salisbury Plain, and we're going to talk about Stonehenge. Monoliths, Merlin, the Mesolithic, and more. Oh, right after the jump. Alrighty. So let's jump right into tonight's topic. We are again talking about Stonehenge. As with any good story, we have to begin at the beginning. I mean, that's the only way to do it. The earliest structures in the area are 4 to 5 pits, 3 of which are thought to have held large totem pole-like posts during the Mesolithic era, between 8500 and 7000 BCE. During this period, the majority of southern England was covered by woodlands. Therefore, the chalk downland in the area of Stonehenge would have been an unusually open landscape. Around 2500 BCE, the first stones were assembled in the center of the monument that we know today. There are 2 types of stones used, the large sarsens and the small blue stones. The sarsens were erected in 2 concentric arrangements. An inner horseshoe and an outer circle. The blue stones were then set between the two in a double arc. Probably at the same time that the stones were being set up in the center of the monument, the sarsens close to the entrance were raised, together with the 4 station stones on the periphery. About 200 to 300 years later, the central blue stones were arranged to form a circle and an inner oval, which was again later altered to form a horseshoe. The Earthwork Avenue was also built at this time, connecting Stonehenge with the River Avon. One of the last prehistoric activities at Stonehenge was the digging around the stone settings of 2 rings of concentric pits, the so-called Y and Z holes, radiocarbon dated by antlers within them to between 1800 and 1500 BC. They may have been intended for a rearrangement of the stones that was never completed.
Oh, man. So me and April were just talking about this a little bit earlier, but the stones that were used look to have come from Wales, like 170 miles like away from where Stonehenge is actually at. So
yeah.
Just trying to imagine cavemen. Or, I mean, essentially cavemen just bringing stones 170 miles, like, traveling that far, considering they weigh, like, a few tons each.
And so far as we know, the wheel hadn't even been invented yet.
Yeah. So do you think it was, like, ancient Egypt, perhaps, you know, like them using a series of like pulleys and like stone sliders or wooden sliders or something like that? Do you think that's maybe the way it worked?
A bunch of lube.
Well, I mean, water could be a lube, you know, for stones, for Stonehenge.
So I think it's entirely possible that it was erected in a similar fashion to the pyramids in Egypt. In fact, it was done around the same time. So it's possible that the cultures then had some sort of, even maybe not the pulleys, technology that we lost, that we don't know about, you know?
Yeah.
Aliens.
Or it could have been aliens.
Also, you know those stones that like move across the desert? And nobody could like figure out why. It always makes me think of those too.
I've never heard of those.
No, it's these stones that like just. Well, you ever seen that episode of SpongeBob?
No.
No. Okay.
Just I mean, I've seen some SpongeBob episodes. I don't recall that one though.
There's this. It's the Krusty Krab Pizza episode, and the stones are just moving across the ocean floor by themselves. But there really are stones that move by themselves in Death Valley. Hmm. They're called sailing stones.
Are they rolling stones?
No. They're not rolling, and they are in the bottom of a dried up lake. And people have been trying for years to figure it out. So they're moving across cracked mud. Of course, everybody said space aliens, magnetic fields, pranksters. Nobody could figure it out. Hmm. And some of them weigh as much as 700 pounds. And they're not rounded. They're kind of, you know, like rough boulders. So it's basically...
Rough boulders.
Yeah. That's exactly what they are.
I want to know what it basically is. I want to know. I'm interested.
So it's basically under certain winter conditions in Death Valley, enough water and ice could come up to the surface that it would be almost that you couldn't see it, but it's there, and it could form enough to cause the rocks to almost float across the muddy bottom if there's a light breeze, which would leave a trail in the mud as the rocks moved.
Yeah, I know about that.
Would Death Valley be able to like get cold enough to generate ice?
Yeah, man, wait a minute. I'm going to send you a picture.
Deserts get crazy cold at night anyway, and this is the bottom of a dried up lake. And we all know it's rather moist in the United Kingdom.
Moist.
Well, so I guess could it be that there possibly could have been ice that they slid them on?
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean,
well, wait a minute. I am not, I'm going to call maybe bullshit on this. Maybe bullshit. I need Carrie to educate me right now, though. Okay. So weren't they aligned, though, with the summer solstice?
They also
or are they aligned
with the winter solstice.
Oh, okay. So they are aligned with both.
Are you talking about Stonehenge?
Yeah.
Well, newer theories is that it's not aligned with the sunrise on the summer solstice, but the sunset on the winter solstice, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but it does line up for the winter solstice. So, what are we thinking here? Trying to find a timeline of ice ages to see if maybe one was happening around the time that this was.
You do that. I'm going to Google Ice Age Stonehenge. Someone has already thought of this, for sure.
Well, here's one thing. Like, transporting them is one thing. But, like, actually erecting them has to be a whole nother thing. Like, you just put...
the ropes come into play.
Well, there's all these websites about Stonehenge. It says Stonehenge was moved by glaciers, not by our prehistoric ancestors.
That would be.
And so, okay, so say the Ice Age.
Seems
moved
pretty precise
the
to be just.
Well, yeah, but maybe it moved the stones from Wales to that area, and then humans erected them in that pattern.
I mean, if we're good at one thing, it's erections.
Hey. It's how we keep existing.
Carrie, could you hear him just now, or is it just me?
What the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a Beavis in the head.
It was definitely the ghost of Blog Talk coming out to play. let's see.
Well, shall I continue talking about Stonehenge?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm just, you know, like learning some things.
Are you going to learn today?
Yeah, go crazy.
All right. So the stone settings at Stonehenge were built at a time of great change in prehistory, or at least so we believe. Just as new styles of quote beaker pottery, which beaker referring to a type of culture. And the knowledge of metalworking, together with the transition to the burial of individuals with grave goods, were arriving from the continent. From about 2400 BC, well-furnished beaker graves such as that of the Amesbury Archer are found nearby Stonehenge. In the early Bronze Age, one of the greatest concentrations of round barrows in Britain was built in the area around Stonehenge. Many barrow groups appear to have been deliberately located on hilltops visible from Stonehenge itself, such as those on King Barrow Ridge and the particularly rich burials at the Normanton Down Cemetery. Four of the Saracens at Stonehenge were adorned with hundreds of carvings depicting axe heads and a few daggers. They appear to be bronze axes of the Ayrton Down type, dating from about 1750 to 1500 BC. Perhaps these axes were a symbol of power or status within early Bronze Age society, or were related in some way to nearby round burials. Ugh. So yes, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, Stonehenge definitely looks like it was a place that could possibly just be like the world's most significant graveyard.
Yeah, that's true. I think that there were multiple things happening at Stonehenge at different times.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think the burials are more like ritualistic in nature.
I don't know if that's true. Oh, sorry. I don't know if that's true, just because, I mean, I think that probably in those days, there were a lot of people dying. I mean, not probably. There were a lot of people dying. People were dying earlier. And I would assume that if they were moving these stones around at all, that would be kind of a risky business back in the day.
Well, I would assume they'd find more bodies than what they've found. Like, you would... I think maybe not necessarily this place is a cemetery, but maybe some place that people went for healing. Like this is a special place that people went to try to cure themselves of any ailments. And then, you know, if they didn't make it, then they just buried him on site.
Well, we are definitely going to get into that. And I watched a program recently on National Geographic where, a theory right now is that people travel there for the solstices and the equinoxes, for these big festivals, not unlike what happens at Stonehenge today, but that there was a group of priests essentially that lived on site year round, and that seems to be who's buried there.
So would that be druids?
There's some debate about whether they're druids or a different group of people, but
what are druids? Do you know? Off the top of your head? Your carry brain?
I've always known druids to be like earth magicians, for lack of a, people like who are in tune with the earth and use that for.
Yeah, but I thought that there was like an actual
stuff like that.
Religious. I thought there was an actual like religious study that was involved in being a druid.
Yeah, so they were a member of a high-ranking priest in ancient Celtic cultures, and their name, druid, comes from some pronunciation of Welsh, Old Irish, and Scottish Gaelic that all variations sound like the word druid.
I vaguely remember the phrase of druid coming up when, like, listening to, like, other podcasts and stuff talking about, what was it, when Julius Caesar went and conquered the Celts in, like, not necessarily in the Ireland area, but actually in, like, Central Europe.
Yeah,
and they talked
Gaul.
About having... And that, yeah, the Gaul. Thank you. Good. Mm-hmm. But they have druids in that society as well. So.
Yeah. So they hung around mainly Oak Forest, and they were priests, teachers, judges. And you're right. Julius Caesar wrote about them when he was in Gaul. The druids, according to Caesar anyway, abstained from warfare and paid no tribute. Many joined the order voluntarily or were sent by their family because of that. They studied ancient verse, natural philosophy, astronomy, the lore of the gods, spending as much as 20 years in training. Their principal doctrine was that the soul was immortal and passed at death from one person into another. They offered human sacrifices for those who were gravely sick or in danger of death in battle. Huge wickerwork images were filled with living men and then burned. Although the druids preferred to sacrifice criminals, they would choose innocent victims if necessary.
Oh, shit. Wicker man?
Yep, that's right.
It's for the greater good. Get your bitch ass in there.
I know all about wicker man.
Oh, man.
There's a movie called Wicker Man. It's an older movie. I'm sure that there's a newer one,
The old one has Christopher Lee. The new one has Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I think I've seen the Christopher Lee version, and he's like a detective or something that goes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I think I watched it in one of my film classes. Interesting.
It's all coming back. I'm coming back to Stone.
It's all coming back to me now.
Okay, so back into the history. From the Middle Bronze Age, less communal effort went into the construction of ceremonial monuments such as Stonehenge, and more on activities such as the creation of fields. In the Iron Age, probably about 700 BCE, a major hill fort later known as Vespasian's Camp was constructed 1.25 miles east of Stonehenge, overlooking the River Avon. Stonehenge appears to have been frequently visited in the Roman period, since many Roman objects have been found there. Recent excavations raised the possibility that it was a place of ritual importance to the Romano-British people. The small town of Amesbury is likely to have been established around the 6th century AD at a crossing point over the Avon. A decapitated man, possibly a criminal, was buried at Stonehenge in the Saxon period. Those druids again.
Oh, yeah.
From this time on, sheep husbandry dominated the open downland around Stonehenge. The earliest surviving written references to Stonehenge date from the medieval period, and from the 14th century onwards, there are increasing references to Stonehenge in drawings and paintings of it.
Now, when you say sheep husbandry, does that just mean men who are fucking their sheep?
Men who are breeding their sheep with each other, with the other sheep, what they did with themselves, I don't want to speculate.
I mean,
Jesus, Christopher, how do you know what animal? How do you not know what animal husbandry is?
I mean, I just
aren't you from Cornville?
Corn.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
I mean, there's not corn husbandry.
I mean,
yeah,
but there's
there is. It's not called that, but there is.
I mean, I've shucked my fair share of corn in my time,
bless.
I mean. That's literally a thing. You got to go detassel the corn. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know.
Hey, you know.
Christopher.
In that time period, you got to do something to get you up in the morning.
Christopher, we've talked about animal husbandry before because the school that I went to, Virginia Tech, it has a huge animal husbandry program. Like, that's one of the things they're known for. So.
A degree in animal husbandry?
Yeah. How do you think people come up with new breeds of animals? That's all it is.
I mean, they put them in a box together and just hope that they work things out.
No,
that's the husbandry.
There's a lot of things. There's a lot to it. I mean, there's a whole college course dedicated to it.
Well, look, you're learning new things every day.
Even things that you already knew.
Just rediscovering. Rediscovery.
I mean, that's the beauty of the mind, babe.
Mm-hmm. Beauty of the mind. Okay. All right. Are we done with animal husbandry? I think we are. Okay. Since 1897, when the Ministry of Defense bought a vast tract of land on Salisbury Plain for Army training exercises, the activities of the military have had an impact on that area. Barracks, firing ranges, field hospitals, airfields, and light railways were established. Some of these, such as the First World War Stonehenge Airfield, have long since been demolished, but others, such as the Lark Hill Airfield sheds, still stand or are an important part of history of early military aviation. Meanwhile, the introduction of turnpike roads and the railway to Salisbury brought many more visitors to Stonehenge. From the 1880s, various stones have been propped up with timber poles. But concern for the safety of visitors grew when an outer sarsen upright and its lintel fell in 1900. What does that mean?
That means that the stone and the shit that was holding it up fell over.
The lintel is the stone that goes across the top of two stones, like the lintel of a doorway.
God, I hope nobody was standing under that shit, because that's going to hurt.
Okay. The lintel. So the lintel fell. Done fell.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So the then owner, Sir Edmund Antrobus, with the help of the Society of Antiquaries, organized the re-erection of the leaning tallest trilithon in 1901. Jeez.
I mean, just gave it some Viagra, pop right back up.
Oh, Christopher.
All it takes is a little effort sometimes.
All it takes is a little effort. And a Hitachi magic wand. That's
all right. So we're just gonna keep trucking along. Oh lordy. So this was the start of a sequence of campaigns to conserve and restore Stonehenge. The last stones were consolidated in 1964. The monument remained in private ownership until 1918, when Cecil Chubb, a local man who had purchased Stonehenge from the Antrobus family at an auction 3 years previously, gave it to the nation. Thereafter, the duty to conserve the monument fell to the state. Today, a role performed on its behalf by English Heritage. From 1927, the National Trust began to acquire the land around Stonehenge to preserve it and restore it to grassland. Large areas of the Stonehenge landscape are now in their ownership. More recent improvements to the landscape, including the removal of the old visitor facilities and the closure of the section of the old A344 that ran close to the stones, have begun the process of returning Stonehenge to an open grassland setting, but there is more that can be done. English Heritage welcomes the work done by Highways England on the design on the proposed road improvement scheme at Stonehenge. The options put forward go a long way towards protecting and enhancing the World Heritage Site.
So lots of, go ahead.
I was gonna say it's crazy that it has lasted as long as it has, and as in the condition that it is.
Yeah, and all the work that they're doing that you were just talking about, where they're kind of rolling back and kind of removing the more modern additions, and so if you go to Stonehenge, it looks like it looked 3,000 years ago.
I think that's the way it needs to be. Just so like you get that sense of, you know, stepping back in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, I love a good hinge, you know.
Love a hinge.
I love a good hinge.
So there have been some very interesting discoveries in recent years. In a new study, Christoph Schoch, an archaeologist at the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom, decided to look at the levels of a form or isotope of the element strontium in the bones, which can reveal where the deceased, buried at Stonehenge, had lived in the decade or so before their death. Strontium levels differ depending on local geology and other factors. From the soil, strontium enters plants. When those plants are eaten by animals and humans, it is incorporated into tissue and leaves, and it leaves its signature in the bone. By comparing strontium levels recorded at different locations with those found in human remains, a person's movements over the final decade of life can be revealed. Normally, bones are unsuitable for this form of analysis, Schnoek says, because they absorb strontium from the soil, blurring the biological signal. But the high temperatures of cremation modified the structure of the bone, he says, effectively sealing in the strontium as it was at death. That such biological information survives the high temperature of cremation was only recently discovered. Snoke's team studied 25 of the cremated individuals interred around Stonehenge. The strontium in their bones suggests at least 10 lived in Western Britain, most probably West Wales before death, rather than near Stonehenge. And there's Wales again. The remaining 15 individuals appear to have lived exclusively in the region local to Stonehenge, at least in the last decade of their lives. That's kind of backing up that theory about them, you know, coming from Wales and then the priests living there year-round.
Yes. Yes. I say yes. Okay. My turn?
Your turn.
Okay. Using infrared and carbon isotope analysis of the bones, the researchers showed that the wood fuel used to cremate some of the bodies reflected that of a dense woodland, as found in Wales rather than the wood grown in the region of Stonehenge. This led them to argue that some individuals had been cremated away from Stonehenge and were brought to the site for burial. The analysis of the cremation suggests that communities in West Wales didn't just supply the blue stones used to build Stonehenge, but were also allowed to be buried there, says co-author John Punset, an archaeologist at Oxford. That suggests strong links between the two communities that trace back to the earliest days of the monument, he says. Taken as a whole, the team's findings highlight the movement of people as well as materials between two regions. Previously, Martin Smith, a biological anthropologist, says some researchers suspected that people from the Presley Hills had moved into the area of Stonehenge and appropriated the existing monument to make legitimate their claim to power and territory. However, the current findings rather imply that the link between Stonehenge and West Wales not only stretched back to the earliest phases of monumental activity, but that this relationship was maintained over many centuries, Smith says. As with all good studies, the current project gives rise to further questions. It will be interesting to see where these lead next. For show.
I do know that more recent attempts at trying to figure out what Stonehenge was all about is utilizing like ground penetrating radar and all that kind of stuff to see what's underneath Stonehenge. So that way they can try to figure that out without actually disturbing the landmark itself. Which is cool. Who doesn't love shooting lasers into the ground like Jurassic Park?
Do they shoot lasers into the ground in Jurassic Park?
Yeah, it was in that first scene where they're digging up a raptor, and then they all walk down, and you got the two dudes that are like standing on one of the devices, and they like shoot a signal down into the ground, like a shotgun shell, and then the dude sitting there on his computer that Dr. Grant touches, and it fucks up the screen.
Is it a laser? I don't remember that version.
Christopher.
I love Jurassic Park, so I could probably just put the whole movie back to you without watching it. But that's an episode for a different time. Paranormal and the dinosaurs.
You know what? I am looking forward to that episode.
Hell yeah, ghost dinosaurs. Let's do it. So now we've gone through the history of Stonehenge. So what is Stonehenge's purpose? Why was it built? And we have a few theories that we're going to go through, but there are quite a few theories. So one of these theories suggests that the Stone Age people saw Stonehenge as a place with healing properties. In 2008, archaeologists Jeffrey Wainwright and Timothy Darville reported that a large number of skeletons recovered from around Stonehenge showed signs of illness or injury. Not quite sure how they show that, but, you know. The archaeologists...
It might be like a broken limb that they can show healed after the injury occurred.
I guess that's true. But, I mean, showing signs of illness. I guess maybe like something that eats away at the bone.
Yeah,
I don't think
we've
got to the age where osteoporosis is a thing that was commonly noticed.
Or maybe maybe they have some kind of genetic condition or something.
I guess that's true. I guess that might be more prevalent back then. The archaeologists also reported discovering fragments of the Stonehenge bluestones, the first stones erected at the site, that had been chipped away by ancient people, perhaps to use as talisman for protective or healing purposes. Perhaps Stonehenge's circular construction was created to mimic a sound illusion. That's the theory of Stephen Walker, researcher in archaeoacoustics,
nice.
Which I I cannot believe it's an actual field of study, but hey, you can doctor anything. Waller says that if two pipers were to play their instruments in a field, a listener would notice a strange effect. In certain spots, the sound waves from the dual pipes would cancel each other out, creating quiet spots. The stones of Stonehenge create a similar effect, except with stones, rather than competing sound waves blocking sound. Waller reported this in 2012 at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Legends associated with Stonehenge also reference pipers, Waller said, and prehistoric stones are traditionally known as quote-unquote piper stones. Waller's theory is speculative, but other researchers have confirmed that Stonehenge has some astounding acoustics. A study released in May of 2012 found that the circle would have caused sound reverberations similar to those of a modern cathedral or concert hall.
Go ahead.
I was saying it's crazy to think that like is you have this big open area, and yet if you were to like stand in the center of it, you would get the same sensation as if you're just in a giant cathedral.
I actually watched a documentary where, I'm not sure if it was Waller himself, but there were a group at Stonehenge testing out this archaeoacoustics, and the music, and I guess you can kind of hear it in the recording. It's probably not nearly what it's like in person, but it sounds insane, like almost to the point where you're like, well, I would see how people would be here at this place. And it would be a religious experience. Like it just, I'll post a link to a video of the way that it sounds on the Facebook page.
You think they did it on accident? Like they just like, are you, cause I mean like these people, I don't think are like trying to get pinpoint accuracy on like, if the stone's here, then we're going to get these crazy sounds.
Well, I think that's the thing. We don't know. We just don't know. Did they arrange it based on, the position of stars and planets in the sky, and it just so happened that it has these amazing acoustics, or did they build it for the acoustics and they just happened to line up with the constellations, or
did they do
combination?
Both?
Yeah, exactly.
Something tells me I think these people are a lot smarter than perhaps we give them credit for.
Well, the nation's Capitol building actually has a spot in it where you can stand and you can hear, like, the acoustics really well. You can hear conversations that are, like, whispers across a room, and you can hear them like they're standing right beside you. So even our forefathers had some sort of a thought of acoustics.
So for anyone wondering...
Go ahead.
So for anyone wondering, archaeoacoustics is the use of acoustical study as a methodical approach within archaeology. Because I had to look it up because I had never heard of it before. And it seems like an interesting field of study.
I think that so often we think we're the smartest people that have ever lived, but we know within recorded history that there can be technology that exists, is lost, and then rediscovered again later. The ancient Romans had indoor plumbing.
It's Twitter.
People died from dirty water in the Middle Ages, and then we have indoor plumbing again. Like, it happened within our recorded history. So what's to say these ancient people didn't have knowledge that we don't, you know, haven't rediscovered yet?
Right.
I would say what sets us apart is just the technology, not necessarily the knowledge. Although, I mean, you would assume that with better technology comes the ability to have better knowledge, but I guess that doesn't automatically imply that we know, like, what we know is far surpassing what they used to know.
Yeah, but I think sometimes if you have technology, then you rely on it, and you don't need to have the ability to think things or do things for yourself because you're relying on technology to do it for you.
I do know that Stone Age people didn't know how to do subnet masking. At least I have that on them.
Yeah, they might have had ancient computer.
Maybe they didn't need that. They didn't need that because they had alien computers. They had, you know, maybe even higher technology.
I'm not saying aliens, but...
aliens. So, the legend of King Arthur provides another story of the construction of Stonehenge. It is told by the 12th century writer Geoffrey of Monmouth in his History of the Kings of Britain that Merlin brought the stones to the Salisbury Plain from Ireland. Sometime in the 5th century, there had been a massacre of 300 British noblemen by the treacherous Saxon leader Hengist. Geoffrey tells us that the High King Aurelius Ambrosius, a possible uncle of King Arthur, wanted to create a fitting memorial to the slain men. Merlin suggested an expedition to Ireland for the purpose of transplanting the giant's ring stone circle to Britain. According to Geoffrey of Monmouth, the stones of the giant's ring were originally brought from Africa to Ireland by giants. There's a tie to good old Egypt there. The stones were located on Mount Kellaraus and were used as a site for performing rituals and for healing. Led by King Uther, Arthur's father, and Merlin, the expedition arrived at the spot in Ireland. The Britons, none of whom were giants, apparently, were unsuccessful in their attempts to move the great stones. At this point, Merlin realized that only his magic arts would turn the trick. So they were dismantled and shipped back to Britain, where they were set up as they had been before, in a great circle around the mass graves of the murdered noblemen. The story goes on to tell that Aurelius, Uther, and Arthur's successor, Constantine III, were also buried there.
That would be a fantastic story if it was actually true. I wouldn't believe that giants were just meandering around carrying the stones.
Yeah, one theory is that those giants were the Nephilim, the children of human women and angels.
We've talked about them before.
I mean, that's it. We've solved it.
Solved it.
Hashtag problem solved.
Hashtag
I mean,
problem
the
solved.
Biggest. I think the biggest hole in that theory is that it's saying that Merlin. Well, besides the fact, you know, Merlin's bringing the stones, but like they're saying they came from Ireland. When I mean, scientifically, we've shown that they came from Wales. So. But I mean,
I think it's, you know, stuff gets mixed up and changed around and stories, and sometimes it's not everything in the myth is true, but there's a kernel of truth in myths.
Yeah.
God, I just wanted to imagine Merlin just using some magic to just float these stones across or translocate them, I guess, probably be the way he would do it.
Hashtag Merlin magic.
I like to imagine Merlin as this, like Pictish, Celtic, just maybe a little Charles Manson-y, maybe a little Jesus Christ-y.
All right, we're going to do it. We're going to rock out with some of this magic. All right.
Yeah, just I can roaming, see it. I can see it.
Just roaming around, tripping balls, and floating stones.
I feel like Dumbledore.
Or
you know,
when he thinks he's flipping stones, so he's just so high that he's like, look at me floating stones. Yeah, look at this. Oh, yeah. I'm floating him across the sky. And everybody's just like, oh, here he goes again. God damn. Merlin. Just smile and nod. Yes, you are doing good work, Merlin.
Man, Merlin. All right. At the time of Stonehenge's creation, the wheel had not even been built. Modern tests have shown it is possible to move stones of similar size on rolling logs or slates, just like ancient Egypt. But the most archaeologists can do is make an educated guess. In Chariot of the Gods, author Eric Van Daniken considered the primary component of the ancient alien theory, suggested the creation of Stonehenge in the Neolithic period was a model for our solar system, serving as the solar and lunar calendar. Bear in mind, supporting evidence is found upon observing the circularly positioned surrounding trench of Stonehenge, connecting at a point that then extends hundreds of meters away from the site, with an extending pathway pointing directly upon the position the sun would lie during the summer solstice. Now, okay. Real talk, I haven't read the rest of this, so I don't know what it says. But this makes me think about the fact that there are actually multiple... All right. Athena's going to play with a pig now.
Okay, I thought it was the ghost of vlog talk.
Come here.
I thought your chair was about to break.
No, it is Athena and her pig. Okay, so now we're good. So there are multiple Stonehenges around that area of the world. So
well, there's multiple hinges, not necessarily Stonehenges.
Well, I mean, they are made of stones. They are Stonehenges. They're just not Stonehenge, TM.
Well, I mean, they're hinges, but like they... I thought a lot of them had wood, not necessarily stone. Like
no,
the hinge.
No, most of them are stone. Almost all of them. I don't think I've ever seen a wooden Stonehenge. I don't think that that's the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of them are.
Sorry. So hinge literally just means a prehistoric monument consisting of a circle of stone or wooden uprights. So this one's called capital S Stonehenge because it's made out of stone.
Yeah.
But there are so many other ones that are also made of stone.
Copyright.
Yeah, they copyrighted that. But there's so many of them, so that kind of makes me think about, you know, the fact that it might be alluding to, you know, the model of our solar system. Do you think that all of the hinges were connected in some way?
I think they're all connected.
Could we take a break on the pigs?
I think that they're connected in a sense of more calendar based than solar system based.
I mean, that's a possibility, but you do think that there is a connection.
Yeah, but I mean,
go ahead.
The calendar was literally based on where the constellations were in the sky. That's how you knew when you needed to plant plants, when you needed to harvest them, when the winter was coming, when the spring was coming, based on where the constellations were in the sky. So your calendar was set by what was above you. No?
See, I think that that's horseshit. Yeah, I think that's horseshit. I'm calling you on your horseshit. I think that's horseshit because there's so many other signs. Yeah, I think that probably, you know, the composition of the stars and certain patterns could be, you know, like a good tip. However, I also think that there are 1,000 other things that would have been just as important, signatures of seasons that they would have probably marked as well, or in lieu of to, you know, say, okay, it's time for me to collect the corn.
I gotta say it's probably a collection of things. Like you'd say when springtime's coming, so they start seeing green come back on the trees and stuff like that. And then they combine that with, okay, we've seen the trees start doing this, and now we see the constellations and stars in a certain pattern. Now we know it's time to do some shit.
See, yeah, okay, I can get down with that. But I think that the stars in no way were their indication, like, okay, it's time now. Like, I mean, Carrie, you have to say, like, I know that this is true. You have felt fall probably already. Like, you felt the impending fall, or you smelled it, or, like, you know.
Did she,
what I mean?
Like, was she high up when she felt the fall? Was it a long fall? A short fall?
I can't wait for you to come upstairs, because I have this really long bamboo, like, skewer for, like, shish kebab, and I'm just going to stick it right in your dick hole.
Oh, man, we're straight up Albert fishing it today, huh?
So,
yeah. I was thinking, like, wrapping you on the shins with it, but damn.
Yeah, I mean, no. She went.
It's pretty sharp, too. I've already pricked myself with it a couple times. And then it's
maybe you should put it down.
It's going to prick your prick.
So I totally agree with you about that and, like, the specificity of the constellations and all that. But if you want to roll it down to the most basic level, the sun is in the sky. The sun gives you life. What is happening up there?
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
The
sun.
Gods doing shit.
Fun.
The sun makes things grow. When the sun isn't as bright or close, things don't grow.
And the sun goes away.
It's science.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Little known fact, that was an original tune by Merlin. Arthur Pendragon on the backup vocals.
Yes. Okay. All right, fine. I believe in you. In turn, this particular layout represented a believed model of the Neolithic solar system. They believed consisted of 9 planets. From this early representation of our early solar system, Daniken proposed that a stone circle served as a landing pad for spaceships or as an observatory for extraterrestrial activity amongst the skies. It was also believed that the excavation of the trenches directed outward pointed towards ancient historic sites. Another stretch of this belief advocates the idea that they served as identifiers for extraterrestrial beings, acknowledging that the planet is inhabited with advanced life. Daniken further claimed that the ancient art and iconography throughout the world depicted air and space vehicles, non-human intelligent creatures, along with artifacts of advanced technology that weren't seen to fit amongst the Neolithic period. The question then appears as to how these anachronistically objects found amongst periods preceding the technology of the period. Were ancient aliens the helping hand that guided civilizations to advance technologically and intellectually, pushing the development of our own known world slowly over thousands of years? Modern scientific explanations cannot yet give an explanation as to how boulders weighing nearly 4 tons were transported over such a great distance to Stonehenge without adequate technology. Therefore, until proven wrong, the speculation around Stonehenge is to be consumed with endless possibilities of its mystifying construction, along with the role it played in the Neolithic period in which it rose.
Fucking aliens.
It could be aliens.
I don't think it's aliens.
Jesus Christ, Athena, you just gave me a goddamn heart attack. Oh, my God.
Attack of the pig.
Has she brought her pig down to you now?
No, she didn't. Like, all the lights and stuff were off down here, so the only light I have is my...
Because you like to live in a cave.
Computer. And then Athena just sort of just meandered up and, like, put her face, like, right on my arm. I peed myself.
You Babadooked yourself. She Babadooked you.
Babadooked it.
I think the pyramids are giant antennas for the aliens, and then Stonehenge is where they're supposed to land.
Well, I think the thing that strikes me most about Stonehenge is, so think about it. You're walking around in the woods, and, you know, all of a sudden you come up on this wide open place where there's nothing growing. It automatically feels otherworldly. So if all of Britain at this time was covered in dense forest, and then you roll up on this wide open space, like, of course you're going to be like, well, what is this? This has to be something.
Especially if it's right next to a river, you would think that, like, trees would be abundant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we know it's just because of the chalk that's under the soil, but...
So it's something similar to that giant circle that's in, what, Romania? Is it Romania?
Yeah, yeah. Good old, now it's my turn to butcher a pronunciation.
I know we discussed it.
Yeah. Hoyabacau for Woods Forest. And it's in Transylvania.
Oh, Hoyabacau.
Hoyabacau. There we go. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Yeah, man, I got you.
But God, I really want to believe that Stonehenge built by the aliens. What do you got? What's your guys' favorite theory on it?
I really favorite think theory. It's lost technology.
I agree. I think it's lost technology. And I also think that we have 1 minute left until the end of this episode. So we need to wrap it up.
Oh, man. So, man. Everybody give us your ideas on what you think. Stonehenge.
Tell us all about it.
Okay, most importantly, head over to the Facebook page and listen to the archaeoacoustic sounds of Stonehenge.
Listen to that, girl, babe. Listen.
Oh, yeah, those sounds are going to blow your mind.
Okay. All right. Well,
sleep deprivation's kicking in.
It's been just a lovely time, guys, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Farewell.
Peace out.